You're in the war room. My name is Vince Negro. Welcome to the program. Hope everyone's doing well out there. All good on our end. Today's program, John Danson, Senior Vice President of the David Foster Foundation. We chat about why he does it, why David Foster does it. You'll find this show amazing, informative, uplifting. Everything you want out of this program, what the David Foster Foundation does is amazing. Stay tuned and you'll catch a great interview with John Danson, Senior Vice President of the David Foster Foundation. John Danson, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
John, we've known each other for a long time, and you've always been someone that I've known that is always on the go. You've always been on the move, organizer. You've always been a great people person, always had a great smile. You've always never lost for words, that's for sure. You've been a people person. I've always seen you as a people person, and it doesn't matter, cross party lines, whatever, you just seem to have a good way about people. And you have had an interesting career. The one that always sticks out to me is the Cleveland Clinic. Tell us a little bit about the Cleveland Clinic and how you started there.
Well, interesting enough, in 2006, I was approached by a doctor who was going to the Cleveland Clinic, who actually was at the Cleveland Clinic, Dr. Tony Miniacci. And he said the Cleveland Clinic is considering opening up in Toronto. The Cleveland Clinic, the second largest hospital in the world, head office, head hospital in Cleveland, and now they're around the world. So I met with them, and that's how it started. Jeff Ruby, Glenn Copeland, and I were three co-founders of the Cleveland Clinic in 2006. We built it out, and we opened in 2007.
That experience, obviously, dealing with people all over the place. I remember calling you a few times. You were driving to Cleveland. You were going back and forth. You were all over the place with that. And now at a time in your life when you should be playing a lot more golf and doing a lot more, which I know you do play a lot of golf, you are the Senior Vice President of the David Foster Foundation. How did that come about? How did you go from the Cleveland Clinic to getting involved with the David Foster Foundation?
Vince, I never anticipated this would happen. I was in 2013. I started in 2006 at the Cleveland Clinic. In 2013, I was there. I loved it. I was 67 years old at that time, planning to retire in 3 or 4 years, and I got a call from Mike Ravenhill, the CEO and president of the David Foster Foundation, asking me if I'd be interested in speaking to them about joining. And I said, I'm probably not interested. I love what I do, but I'll meet with you. After meeting with Mike, who is fantastic, and learning about the families and visiting families and babies at Sick Kids Hospital, I said, this is my legacy. This is my gift back. This is what I want to show my kids, my grandkids, and the rest of the family that's important. My father always said, you'll be judged by what you can do for those who can't do anything in return. I'm doing that right now. He'd be proud.
Yeah, and it's a great foundation. David Foster, when you hear that name, everybody assumes that he's just a singer, songwriter, plays the piano with all the big stars. He started this foundation. Tell us a little bit of how he started the foundation and when he started that foundation, John.
First of all, I want to mention, as big a star as David Foster is, he's the real deal. He's one of the nicest individuals and caring individuals I've ever known. In fact, most people don't know this. He has given his time and his volunteer time to over 400 charities. But let's get back to your question. In the early 80s, David received a call from his mother. David was born and raised in Victoria. His mother was in Victoria. And she called him and said, there's a young girl having a liver transplant in UCLA hospital from Victoria because BC Children's weren't doing children's liver transplants at the time. And she's having a terrible time. Can you please go and visit her? Not as a star, not as a special person, but just as you, David. David went and visited the family in the hospital. And as he was leaving, he said to the girls, is there anything that I can do to help you get through this. And he figured she might say Disney World or some other special wish. And she said, to see my baby sister. At that point, David said, I'm going to make that happen. And when the uncle and the sister came to the hospital and David saw them, their eyes together, he said, this is when I'm going to start my foundation. And in 2086, the foundation was started.
Cool. So you get this call. Like you said, you're at the Cleveland Clinic. You go meet with these folks. They move you. And you figure, look, this is something I got to do. I can't say no to this. You make the move. You go there. Obviously, David started this foundation based on the story you said. It's over the years, it's done fundraising, gone all over the world to raise funds. When you first started and you got there, did you assimilate very quickly, or did you feel like, you know, you're a bit of a fish out of water coming from the medical field? I know you were great with people. What was that first couple of days when you got over to the David Foster Foundation? Aside from that personal feeling that you had to give back, well, what was that transition like for you, John?
It was actually seamless. You know, there's only five people in the foundation. As David says, we're small, but we're mighty.
Right.
And so I was received most positively. And again, Mike Ravenhill, the president and CEO, made that happen. So it was seamless. It was just wonderful. They wanted me to, the goal was to raise $30 million in endowment fund so that when we stopped doing the fundraising, we could support families in perpetuity.
So John, you get there, obviously you're the senior vice president working out of Toronto. The mandate obviously is to raise money across the board, obviously looking at different ways and how you can raise money. Because, you know, as the economy gets tougher and tougher with interest rate, you know, yes, there are people who have endowment funds, but the average person who's watching this program can also contribute to the David Foster Foundation, can they not?
Absolutely. We'd be delighted. They just have to go to davidfosterfoundation.com, and there's different ways they can donate. And they can donate pennies, dollars, or whatever.
And John, the David Foster Foundation, it seems to me like they have different events throughout the year, but they have a big gala event that they have kind of once a year?
Since I've been there, we have a gala sometimes annually and sometimes every other year. We have a smaller 4-day event in the years that we don't have a gala. Because we're blessed with David Foster Foundation, David, because what he's done for other performers, they will do for him, and they'll come to our galas and donate their time. And so we're blessed for it. But remember, we support every Canadian family that has a child going through the life-saving organ transplant and needs financial help. And so we are children's hospitals, we're children, we're family, we're keeping families together, and we bring together these galas. Everybody loves to get involved.
Yeah, obviously it's about raising money because money will help in these things, but being specific in terms of the David Foster Foundation, you mentioned organ donations, and we were talking off camera that Nova Scotia is the only province in Canada that you have to opt out. If you live there, you automatically, when you pass away, your organs are donated. And I think you said one in five or every five people pass away need an organ transplant?
Great. That's very important, Vince. First of all, we only have 80% of Canadians supported. We have 30% who are registered in Canada, about 35 in Ontario. We have 4,500 on the wait list. We have 1,600 coming on the wait list every year. Every week, we have five people die who are on the wait list. That's one in every 30 hours.
The David Foster Foundation is, as you said, it's not just for the big stars. You know, like you see all those names like the Earth, Wind, and Fire. He's been associated with a lot of people over the years. Grammy winner, Juno winner. I can go on and on and on. You know, he discovered the Michael Blue Blaze of this world. He's been in that music industry everywhere. But it hits home, the average person who's watching this program has problems like everybody else. They need help like everybody else. And the David Foster Foundation is a foundation that over time has grown, and I've seen it more and more out there, and it's just amazing the good work that it's doing, that a lot of folks still don't know all the work that David Foster Foundation does.
Well, imagine, Vince, imagine that you live in Kenora, hours away from Toronto. You find out that your child needs a heart transplant. You're 1 year old. You have two kids that are in Kenora with a family. You have to look after them. You have to move with your other child who needs the heart transplant into Toronto for sick kids. And you have accommodation, you have rent to pay, you have travel, you have planes in both places. Before the David Foster Foundation came around, close to 85% of the families were either bankrupt or divorced. We want to keep the families whole. We want them to spend all their time looking after their kids and looking after the one that's going through transplant. So we take the financial burden away.
Wait, John, someone who's watching this program, and obviously they want to contribute, as you said, go to the website and contribute. On the flip side, if someone needs help, how do they get in touch? How does the David Foster Foundation decide on who gets what help? Is it done through the hospital systems? How does that work, John?
Fabulous question. There's basically seven hospitals, children's hospitals across Canada. When someone comes in to have a transplant, there'll be a transplant committee, the surgeon, the doctors, the naturopath, the dietitian, and a social worker. And the social worker meets with the family. And then, as I gave the Kenora example, they would talk to the family and say, this is what we think it's gonna cost. What is your present situation? And based on the situation, if there's a need, then they tell us to apply to the David Foster Foundation. We work with the hospital, the social worker, and the family, and every single family who needs financial help while they're going through this transplant, we support.
So John, organ donations, we talked about, very important. Give us a little some statistics in terms of that whole program that the David Foster Foundation works with.
Well, the one that I haven't addressed already is the one that if you're an organ donor and you're registered, you can save up to 8 lives and enhance 75 other lives. So it's
an amazing statistic.
Amazing. Another statistic that is important is it's 6 times greater that you will need an organ than you will have to give an organ. So it's in your best interest, selfishly, to be a registered organ donor. And to do that, you just have to go to davidfosterfoundation.com. In 2 minutes online, you can sign up and register.
John, obviously a lot of these families, it pulls at your heartstrings in terms of trying to help. What is one of the stories that has really pulled at you? You sent me a video the other night that was actually a very moving video, and we're going to share that with the folks. Tell us a little bit about one of the most moving families that you've helped out.
I'll be careful not to mention names because of
course. Of course.
But in 2018, a family, a young girl, Isla, was 6 weeks old. And she had SIDS. She died of SIDS. And so they decided that their daughter would be an organ donor. This person lived in Ontario. There was another family in Ontario whose daughter is Rosie, who had been at 10 days old, was registered to be a heart recipient and waited over 100 days to receive a heart. And she got the word, the family got the word, that their Isla's heart was coming at their daughter.
Wow.
In 2019, we brought the two families together. They met on social media at Hotel X. And when I saw them come together, in fact, we were filming it. My wife called me during the filming, said, how's it going? I said, I had no idea, I'm crying too much. Rosie's parents brought a teddy bear with a recording of Isla's heart and gave it to the family who lost their child. And then they asked if they wanted to hear Isla's heart. And so they had a stethoscope and we saw that happen. But that's not where it ended. Rosie's mother was so appreciative of the heart, as you can imagine, of the transplant, and realizing that Isla's mother could not have any more kids. She said, I will carry a baby for you. if you can believe it. And a year later, we were at our gala and they were on the stage together and they presented the baby that was 2 weeks old.
All worth the time and the effort, hey, John?
Every second, Vince.
That's great. That's great. John, you know, obviously coming off of COVID, a lot of people, the budget's a little bit tighter. But when you listen to yourself and you see the good that the David Foster Foundation, you don't mind putting a little bit extra and find that looks a few extra few bucks to put it into an organization such as yourself. Every organization has goals. And last year and this year, what are the goals this year in the next year or so for the David Foster Foundation? Aside from raising money, is there a goal that you guys put on in terms of the amount of money that you want to raise? Is there a different kind of goals that you guys set for yourselves as a foundation?
Well, first of all, we will support every single family who needs the financial help. So whatever that is, that's our goal, to have enough money to do right. that. Originally, it was $30 million in endowment. And based on the investment, we use that money to look after the families on a year-to-year basis. But because of new technology, because of more organ available, more organ transplants are happening. So we now raise the bar from 30 million to 50 million.
50.
And we think at $50 million, 10 years from now, we can still look after every single family across Canada.
But, you know, as I said to you, if people are watching this program and they want to help and contribute, it's not just those big names that contribute. It's the small $15, $20, $50, $100 that really adds up.
Well, Vince, it's a great point. I believe, and I write articles on it in our newsletters, that it's everyone's duty to be philanthropic. Philanthropic doesn't say you have to give a lot of money. Philanthropic says you just have to be able to give support. So if $5 a month or $5 in one single is what you can do, then you're philanthropic. We are blessed to have other people that give larger sums, but in total, it all comes together, so it works.
John, you know, we've talked about setting goals and yourself. You are still in there. You're working it out, working it away. I'm sure at some point, whether you're in it full time or not, you're always going to have some sort of a handle in it, because it's very difficult to walk away from an organization such as the David Foster Foundation. Do you see yourself maybe taking a little bit of a step back?
Well, yes, at some point, but I'm in my 78th.
Maybe in about 30 years?
Yes, exactly. I'm in my 78th year right now. I have no plans in the next couple of years for sure. So it will happen at some point. If I can go back to 2013, when I told my kids I was going to the David Foster Foundation, I was 67 at the time, my kids said, does David know how old you are? And so now I am, and so I came on for 3 years, and now I'm in my 11th year, and I love every second. But what I do, and I urge the viewers to go to the foundation website to look at some films for families. When I go to the sick kids hospital, when I feel a little off, I go to the hospital and visit the families.
It's a great point, John. My daughter is a nurse practitioner at Sick Kids, and I always tell people, if you think you're having a bad day, just walk through Sick Kids for a half hour, 40 minutes. You have no idea how great you feel after you walk out of that hospital. You know, it's just giving back, especially to kids, is just an unbelievable feeling. And like you said, John, to be philanthropic, you don't have to have millions. It's what you can give that is very important.
It's an act.
Yeah.
Vince, my kids laugh at me. When I watch the videos of our families, and I've watched them 100 times, I cry every single time.
Yeah.
In most cases, the result is fantastic, but I get very emotional.
Yeah.
When I don't cry, then I'll know I shouldn't retire.
Yeah. And you know, John, I'd be remiss to tell you is that David Foster obviously is an amazing performer, talented person. But on video, I saw his four-year-old son, I think his five-year-old son, play the drums. And obviously the kid's got the genes, because I've never seen a kid at that age
play the drums the way he was playing
actually,
that.
You'll be surprised. He just turned three.
Three, sorry. I thought it was four. Okay, so I'm off by ear.
And when you see him play, he's not just banging.
No.
He's right. Getting to the beat. It's unbelievable.
So, John, David Foster Foundation, the website is where most folks can go and check out the site in terms of what the foundation is doing, make contributions.
Absolutely. We'd be honored to have people go to it.
John, I keep it up. Anything else we can do here at the program, we would love to continue to support. We'd like to check in with you occasionally and see how things are going with the foundation. And we'll let folks know where they can contribute to the David Foster Foundation. John, again, thanks for coming on the program. We much appreciate the insight a little bit on the David Foster Foundation.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
Yeah. Thanks for being with us, and we'll see you next time on The War Room.